Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 28th. Superintendent termination likely to be lengthy process by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD trustees on Monday started the superintendent termination process that could take another 3.5 months to complete. The process began with a board voting 7-0 to propose termination of Superintendent Orlando Riddick's contract. The process appears to be standard with Texas Association of School Boards protocol for terminating a term contract and discharging the superintendent at any time for good cause. Riddick's contract is set to expire on June 30, 2022. There are several steps in the process. The superintendent is to be provided with notice of the reasons why the board is proposing to terminate the contract. This is expected within the next few days, according to Midland ISD. There could be a waiting period to see if the superintendent requests a hearing in front of an independent examiner. Riddick has 15 days after receiving notice to file a written request for a hearing. A full evidentiary hearing would be held before an independent hearing examiner. The examiner has 60 days from the date the hearing is requested to complete the hearing and write a recommendation. The board would consider the examiner's recommendation and then take final action to terminate the contract or not. The superintendent could appeal the board's decision by filing a petition for a review with the Commissioner of Education. The commissioner must issue this within 30 days, and either side may appeal the commissioner's decision to the district court level. Following is a summary of the superintendent termination process provided by Midland ISD. In the context of a superintendent termination, the first step is for the board to take action to propose the termination of the superintendent's term contract. The Midland ISD board voted to propose termination of the superintendent's contract at Tuesday night's board meeting. Following a vote to propose termination, the board must provide the superintendent with notice of the reasons why the board is proposing to terminate the contract. The superintendent then has 15 days after receiving notice to file a written request for a hearing. If the superintendent files a request for a hearing, the Texas Education Agency will assign an independent hearings examiner, IHE. A full evidentiary hearing will be held before the IHE. The process includes not only the preparation of witnesses and documentary evidence during the hearing, but allows for a pre-hearing discovery, including depositions as well. The IHE has 60 days to complete the hearing and write a recommendation from the date the hearing is requested. The board will conduct a meeting to consider the IHE's recommendation. The board retains the authority to determine what constitutes good cause for purposes of termination. The board will then take final action to terminate the contract or not. The superintendent may appeal the board's decision by filing a petition for a review with the Commissioner of Education. The commissioner must issue his decision no later than the 30th day after the last day on which a response to the petition for a review must be filed. Either side may appeal the commissioner's decision to the district court level. Odessa Shooting Victims' Families to Sue Gun Seller and Manufacturer by Caitlin Randall. Family members of two Odessa shooting victims are suing Marcus Anthony Brazil, the man who allegedly sold an AR-style rifle to the gunman who killed 7 and injured 25 a year ago, as well as the manufacturing company that allegedly sold firearms and gun parts to Brazil. The suit will be filed this morning at the Ector County Courthouse following a press conference, according to a press release from a lawyer for the families of Leila Hernandez, 15, and Joe Griffith, 40, who were killed in the shooting on August 31, 2019. Brazil's residence was raided by the FBI and the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives in September 2019 because of suspicion he was illegally manufacturing and selling guns from his home in Lubbock. 29 guns were seized at that time, and the investigation is ongoing. He allegedly told investigators he acquired over 60 AR-type rifles and pistols in the span of 3 years, and sold the firearms online, despite not having a federal firearms license. The ATF allows unlicensed dealers to occasionally sell firearms in Texas if they aren't repeatedly purchasing and selling firearms with a motive of making a profit. The suit also names Kentucky-based Anderson Manufacturing as a defendant, alleging the company was negligent in selling multiple firearms and gun parts to Brazil. Anderson Manufacturing was obligated to exercise reasonable care in selling firearms so as to never needlessly endanger the public by arming prohibited or otherwise dangerous purchasers, the press release states. The Odessa gunman, Seth Ator, failed a commercial background check in 2014 when he attempted to purchase a gun from a licensed seller because of a previous commitment to a mental health institution. Hernandez was shot and killed at Freedom Buick GMC in Odessa while looking at trucks with her family. Her brother was injured in the shooting. Griffith was stopped at a traffic light with his two wife and children when he was shot and killed. The families will hold a press conference 11 a.m. today at the Ector County Courthouse. Midland County on track for fewer than 200 cases, by Stuart Doreen. Midland County is on track for another drop in the weekly number of coronavirus cases. The Midland Health Department reported Thursday there had been 119 coronavirus cases this week. That is 4 fewer through Thursday, week over week, and puts the community in position to post a lower number than last week, when there were the fewest numbers of coronavirus cases in 2 months, according to the health department. What appears certain is that for the second straight week, there will be fewer than 200 reported cases in Midland County. The health department would have to report 81 cases on Friday, the last day of the reporting week, for the county to hit 200. Last week there were 71 cases, the most of any day last week on Friday, but 81 cases would be about double what the health department has been reporting on average each day over the last 2 weeks. The Midland Health Department on Thursday reported 35 new confirmed cases in Midland County, bringing the total number of cases during the pandemic to 3,201. The health department also showed 1,330 active cases, 911 isolated cases, and 419 under investigation, which was an increase of 12 compared to Wednesday. Also, the health department said 1,642 Midland County residents have recovered, an increase of 19 compared to Wednesday. Today's new cases are reflective of lab results from Wednesday, the health department reported.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 28, 2020. Concert canceled. Josh Abbott Band performs during the Patrick's Day Music Fest hosted by Max Barbecue, March 17, 2018, in downtown Midland. The band has canceled a drive-in concert planned for today at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. WNPAC offers concert updates. The Josh Abbott Band drive-in concert planned for today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center has been canceled, the venue posted on its Facebook page. The cancellation is because of logistics and travel concerns caused by Hurricane Laura. Ticket buyers have been emailed information about the refund process, according to the Post. Intocable concert rescheduled. The Intocable drive-in concert, which was scheduled for Saturday, has been rescheduled for September 18 because of logistical issues caused by the hurricane, according to a separate Facebook post from the venue. Tickets purchased for the Saturday concert will be honored for the September date, according to the Post. Wizard of Oz exhibit coming to Centennial. The Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch will be hosting Wizard of Oz educational exhibit September 8 through December 19. The exhibit is based on the Warner Brothers film and features movie elements such as Dorothy's Ruby Slippers, Munchkin Land, The Witch's Castle, and Emerald City, according to a press release from MCPL. Centennial Branch will be open 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Saturdays beginning September 12, to allow more patrons to view the exhibit. The exhibit will be cleaned multiple times a day, and visitors must wear masks or face coverings, according to the release. The exhibit is made possible by FMH Foundation, Ree Charitable Trust, Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust, Peave House Family Foundation, Midland County Public Library Foundation, and Midland County. MC to host virtual resource fair. Midland College will hold a virtual student involvement and resource fair, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., Wednesday. CHAPS Connect is an opportunity for students to explore various clubs and honor societies. To register for CHAPS Connect, go to https://midland.formstack.com/forms/essential_bingo_copy. For more information, contact Taniqua Hurdle, Student Activities Coordinator, at thurdle@midland.edu or 685-4543. Dick's Sporting Goods plans grand opening. Dick's Sporting Goods at Midland Park Mall will be celebrating its grand opening today through Sunday. Customers will have the opportunity to win prizes, including a $1,000 grand prize, according to an email from the company. For more information, go to dicks.com/Midland. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. In addition, the Health Department will have immunization clinics 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and September 12, and 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. September 21. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. City watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Today in Texas history. In 2013, a military jury sentenced Major Nadal Hassan to death for the 2009 shooting rampage at Fort Hood that claimed 13 lives. In 2017, floodwaters reached the roof lines of the single-story homes as Hurricane Harvey poured rain on the Houston area for a fourth consecutive day. Thousands of people had been rescued from the flooding. In 2018, a white former police officer, Roy Oliver, was convicted of murder for fatally shooting an unarmed black 15-year-old boy, Jordan Edwards, while firing into a car packed with teenagers in suburban Dallas. Oliver was sentenced the following day to 15 years in prison.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, August 28th, 2020. Section A. Getting Better Day by Day. Survivor Looks Toward Recovery by Michael Merlot. Fatai Kadri has a different routine than he had a year ago. He walks with a limp, which he says is an improvement and a gift from God. Kadri is 42 years old and has scars from the 3 bullets that entered the left side of his body during Odessa's mass shooting August 31st, 2019. He said he doesn't want to dwell on that memory and all he wants is to get back to supporting his family. I get tired, he said in a phone interview. As time goes on, I stopped using the walker. Now I'm walking by myself. I'm seeing changes every day, getting better day by day. He said that months ago he couldn't walk more than a minute, and at 2 minutes he would be sweating and in pain around his waist. Now he said he can walk for about 4 to 5 minutes. The leg is a little bit shorter than the other one, so my walking's not balanced, he said. Kadri said that all the bullets are out, but he's still at home from the pain. Even when I sleep, I have to wake up in the night from the pain, he said. After moving from Nigeria in 2009, he started working in the oil fields in Midland and Odessa, where he still hopes to work sooner than later. A year ago, Kadri worked in Odessa, Midland, 3 weeks on, and then he would go back home to spend time with his family, he said. He had just bought his own truck to transport frack sand for oil companies and said he was saving up money while paying it off. It was around 3:15 p.m., August 31st, when Kadri was driving his truck westbound on Interstate 20 from Midland to Odessa. He said the truck was on cruise control at 65 miles per hour when he heard a shot. When I got shot, when I see the blood, that is when I tried to stop the truck, he said. Kadri said that he tried to press the clutch to stop the truck, but his leg was broken and he couldn't move it. I just tried to use the other leg, he said. He put the truck in neutral and moved it to the side of the road, but couldn't get out because of his leg. He said another truck driver saw him, noticed the sporadic driving, and called 911. This guy was speaking with 911 before the police come, he said. A law enforcement officer drove up in a pickup truck and put him in the bed of the truck before taking him to an EMS, and then he was transferred to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he had an operation and stayed for more than a week. He said he was shot once in the leg and twice in the hip. His recovery from that day, he said, has been substantial, but there is more work to do. Now I just have to be at home, he said. My goal is to just get back to my feet just like before. He lives with his wife and 4 children in Katy. This isn't what he wanted, he said, but as a Muslim man, he looks at his life as a test. That's how he looks at his injuries, and giving up is not an option. When I wake up in the morning, I try to learn trade stock, he said, adding that maybe he could make some money while recovering at home. He checks the stock market and reads how-to books, but it's not so much the money that Kadri is concerned with as much as how he makes it. I bought a truck, and I have a loan to be paying, so I try to get a driver, but getting a driver isn't reliable like driving it yourself. Kadri lives that way. He prides himself on being a hard worker and someone who is in the driver's seat. He added that the money he's received from fundraisers after the incident has gone to pay some of that loan as well. I've gotten some support from people from online and also from the Chamber of Commerce, he said. People are pretty amazing when they hear something like that happen to you. He said that the money from fundraisers is not forever, so he really wants to get back to work. And although he's waiting for government support, he doesn't want to rely on those benefits. I like to be self-reliant, he said, especially for a man who is the head of the house. In Africa, that is what makes you a man. That is what we call a man in Africa, if you are able to provide for your wife and children. His wife, Fasilat Kadri, 35, said that it's been difficult a little bit with the fees and for the bills and everything. She said that the fundraiser has helped and she works a little bit, but she's glad he's doing better. Kadri spoke about how he prepares for life's tests with humor, but also in resiliency, comparing it to his 17-year-old daughter getting her license. If he doesn't help her find a car, he said, then the consequences will be that he'll have to drive her. He spoke about living life rather than letting life's circumstances come to him, even if those circumstances are unplanned. As far as his memory of the shooting, Kadri said he is focused on moving forward and doesn't think about that time more than he has to. It's just an incident that someone cannot forget, especially when you are still dealing with it. So I try to get over it. He said that thinking about what happened is not a solution to his problems, but is rather another problem. In life, we always go through things, one thing or the other, at a particular time, but we just have to sit down and face the reality and face the problem and find the solution, he said. Hawal Qadri, 17, his eldest daughter, had similar sentiments and said that things have gotten better and she's glad to have her father at home. At first, it was a struggle seeing him like that, and it was just really hard because any time I ever thought about my dad, he's just been like someone that's strong for me and someone that I really look up to. She said that it was hard to see her father down, but things have gotten better. He's getting stronger. She said he was in the hospital for around 2 months. He was at Midland Memorial Hospital and then went to hospitals near where he lives. She added she also had to sit down and think about what had happened to her father, reflect, and have someone to talk to about it. It comes back at you, and it does affect the things around you, even if you might not notice it, she said. She and Fatai are always at home together, she said. They spend a lot of time talking and they watch movies and share meals. Qadri said that now he's trying to give time to God because it could be worse than this. It's like you are going somewhere and they block the road. You don't have to stay there, he said. You make a U-turn back and try to find the road you were on and get back on your route. It's always like that. That is life. Like you are going somewhere, it's not always straight. The road is not always straight. You bend somehow, but if you don't give up, you will see the end of your destination. That is if you don't give up, but if you give up, then it doesn't end. People come out to help, but it is still your problem, and at the end of the day, it is going to remain you, your wife, and the children, he said. Qadri looks forward to watching soccer with his friends, a hobby he enjoyed doing on his days off, and taking his kids to the park where they said they would walk for miles. He said with the progress he's making now, he might be able to get back to those physical hobbies in a year or so. He does rehab 3 times a week for an hour and also works out at home. He said he bought an exercise bike to ride as well. I keep on recovering little by little, so I think if I'll be able to do that, it will take another year. This week is still better than last week. A painful and emotional recovery. Andrew's teacher sidelined by injury, by Sam Waller. What started out as a spur-of-the-moment movie date with her husband turned into a life-altering event for Penny Moore. A retired schoolteacher from Andrews, Moore and her husband Dennis were among the cinema-goers at Synergy Odessa, August 31, 2019, when Seth Aaron Ader's shooting spree ended in a gun battle between law enforcement and Ader, who died in that final exchange. Ader's murderous rampage ended after he killed 7 and injured 25 others in an hour-long shooting spree around Odessa. The Moors were among a group that was first told to exit the theater, then ordered back inside as Ader and law enforcement agencies had their final confrontation in a field near Synergy when Ader was shot to death in a stolen postal van he had hijacked in Odessa. In the rush of running back into the theater, Moore suffered a broken left ankle. We were rushed out in the middle of the movie and were not initially told what was going on, she said. They just came in and said, we've got to get out now. They opened the door to the pasture outside the theater and rushed us all out. We stood out there, I don't know how many minutes before anyone even said what was going on. We stood out there for a little bit, and all of a sudden we heard somebody yell, get down, and we started hearing gunshots by the street in front of us. There were cars lining the street all up and down that highway. The sound of gunfire brought home just how serious the situation was, Moore said. My mind was telling me, get down, this is real, she said. At my age, it took a little while to get down flat on the ground on that unlevel pasture. Then they suddenly hollered, "Get up and run back to the building." When I got up and running toward the building, my foot went into a hole and I went down. A man who I believe was an off-duty or retired fireman, my husband couldn't get me up, rushed by, scooped me up, and ran me over to the building and set me down in a chair. Eventually, I was carried up to the lobby from the movie theater, back up to the lobby where we waited for an ambulance about an hour or so later. While far from the most serious injury of the encounter, it took almost the rest of 2019 for more to recover. Getting over what sounds like a little bitty thing of breaking an ankle took 5 months and 2 surgeries, 6 days in the hospital, and 12 weeks of therapy, she said. My insurance company would call about once a month to check about my psychological condition and did I need a counselor. I haven't had one. I felt like I was okay. I did take Tylenol. I didn't even take any heavy medicines because I don't like the way they make me feel. The 12 weeks of therapy finished up about the middle of December. It took from August 31st to December to get where I could walk. And even after that, it's been a process of getting back to where I could actually walk without flinching. For Dennis Moore, an account manager for Graco Oilfield Services, the lasting impact has been more emotional. "This old world's getting screwier every day, crazier every day," he said. "Since it happened, I think we've been to one movie, but she's still not real crazy about going to movies or stuff like that. It's affected the way we look at things as far as going to a mall or a theater or anything. You don't know in this day and time now. People are just flat crazy. We're old. I mean, I'm 68, but I've never seen it like it is now." Penny Moore said the confusion of the situation made it that much more terrifying. My husband wasn't sure when I went down, she said. He thought I'd been hit. That was what scared him the most because we could hear the gunshots. We could hear children and women crying all around us because they were terrified. All I can remember thinking is, I've got to get down. This is real. Moore, a grandmother of 5, spent 25 years with the Andrews School District teaching elementary students at 3 campuses. She retired in May 2019 after teaching 5th grade science at Underwood Elementary School. "I've taught reading. I've taught special ed," she said. "I've just had a whole variety over 25 years. Moore remains involved in the classroom as a substitute teacher, though she missed all of the 2019 fall semester. "As a matter of fact, I got called while I was in the hospital and had to explain that I had broken my ankle and would not be able to work until after December," she said. "I did go sub some, but it was mostly half days, and it would just about take it completely out of me to do a half day using a cane. But I can hardly stand not being around the kids. I've got to have that shot. It's not so much a money thing as, I guess, a calling. I still love to do it." Moore is also active in her church, Odessa Gospel Lighthouse Church, and she has taught adult Bible study and adult Sunday school classes over the years. "Between adult Bible and kids' activities at school, my time was pretty much taken up," she said. Moore said that as an educator, she had received training in what to do in crisis situations, but it was nothing like the events of a year ago. "Teachers are taught how to react in these situations," she said. "We practice them at school all the time. We're taught to lock down. We have the different signals that go off. We're taught how to lock the doors, how to put the kids in a corner, how to have the room dark, all the things you do for an intruder or gunman in the building. Your first care is for those students." "When I found out what was going on, I thought, why would you rush all these people out into an open field beside the theater? What I was told later was they didn't know if there was more than one." In the aftermath, Moore said, she was almost totally dependent on her husband of 47 years. He took care of me totally those first 4 months, she said. He'd go to work and come back. He'd check on me. He cooked every meal and waited on me hand and foot because I couldn't get on my foot at all the first 4 weeks. Even after that, it was with a walker or some form of walking device. He had to do everything. He was a great support. Dennis Moore said the care of his wife... Dennis Moore said the care his wife received at Medical Center Hospital got the recovery process off to a good start. Medical Center with Russell Tippin in charge, they were great, he said. That whole floor, the nurses and personnel, you couldn't ask for better people. They made a good decision when they hired Russell Tippin, who was named president and CEO of Medical Center Health System early in August last year, an old Andrews boy. He knows what he's doing. That whole hospital system is fantastic. Every nurse, every physical therapist, everybody we needed to talk to was right there. Another benefit was the support the Moores and other victims received from state and area officials. The state of Texas came in and picked up part of the bill, Dennis Moore said. Just with a broken ankle, having two surgeries and doctors and all that, that was a chunk of money that my insurance company got stuck with. They picked up a lot of the bills. Penny Moore was also visited by Governor Greg Abbott and Senator Ted Cruz, Republican, Texas, during her hospital stay. I am thankful to the good Lord to be alive and well, she said. Moore said the outpouring was immediate. I would like to thank all those who came to check on me, support me, and who showed their concern for me, she said. I appreciate all the folks at the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, and there were several people here in Andrews who immediately got together a little fundraiser type thing out of the sweetness of their hearts. They played games and things to give us the contributions from that as a support. There were a lot of sweet people. I thank the good Lord, honestly and truly, because it could have been a lot worse than what it actually was, and that was bad enough. Quilting Love. Some West Texas quilters are using their talents to honor the victims of the August 31st mass shooting. Take a look at these works of art in Saturday's Odessa American. Remembering Raul. Perla Garcias was widowed after 15 years and 4 children with husband Raul, who was killed driving his truck near Odessa. He loved his kids. They were everything to him, Perla reflects on his life and on life without him in Sunday's OA. Top Cops. Odessa's top lawmen talk about what was learned from the tragedy and how law enforcement has coped during the last 12 months. Don't miss Sunday's OA. Toddler thriving. The tiniest victim of the mass shooting is a precious toddler, and her family is giving back in big ways to Odessa. Meet the Davis family in Monday's Odessa American. Odessa Rotary. The Odessa Rotary Club has an Odessa Strong Commemoration free lunch planned for 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Monday at the Central Fire Station for uniformed first responders. The Bridge. The Bridge will live stream a special remembrance service and prayer vigil to honor victims, survivors, and first responders, 6 p.m. Sunday. The in-person event will just be for the victims and their families, as well as a few invited first responders, but will live stream the event for the public. Visit thebridgeodessa.org. Memorial events. Share stories, photos, art with hashtag Odessa Strong and hashtag A Time to Remember. Place yellow ribbons on homes and businesses. On August 31st, 32 yellow flags will be displayed at Memorial Gardens and a hashtag Odessa Strong banner. Also, 1,000 smaller flags are available at the Family Resiliency Center the Chamber, Odessa Arts, Connections Church, and area businesses. At 3 p.m. August 31st, observe 32 seconds of silence. A drive-in prayer vigil at Connection Christian Church at 8 p.m. August 31st. This will be a socially distant event with masks. The design and artist for the August 31st art piece will be announced. City announces second round of testing by Michael Merlot. The City of Odessa announced a second round of drive-through COVID-19 testing in September and October with a Thursday press release. The free COVID-19 testing sites will take place September 16th at McKinney Park, Christmas Line, September 23rd at UTPB Park, Soccer Field Parking, September 30th at Sherwood Park, East 49th and Cordova Parking Lot, and October 14th at Floyd Gwynn Park, West 10th parking lot. 200 tests will be available at each drive-through site for City of Odessa and Ector County residents, the release detailed. The release states that the testing is first come, first served, and that residents must show proof of residency and provide good contact information, phone number, and email in order to get results. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. During the Thursday virtual hospital briefing, Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that although MCH has not changed their visitor policy, they will allow terminally ill patients a visitor with strict precautions starting Monday. We've gathered up and we created a release of liability. We have some cappers, and so that's a total unit where you're basically covered head to toe in full covering. So we'll begin Monday allowing patients who are going to be passing or are actively passing to have one visitor for 15 minutes to be able to come in, have some closure, have some goodbyes before their loved one passes, she said, adding in the upcoming weeks, MCH will be evaluating visitor restrictions. As of 2 p.m. Thursday, MCH reported in a press release that out of 1,335 positive cases of coronavirus, 27 positive patients are in the hospital. 8 are in the critical care unit and 6 of them are on ventilators, while 19 patients are on the 8 central isolation unit, a press release detailed. 14 COVID-19 tests are reportedly pending at MCH, and the in-house patients include one from Andrews, 5 from Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation, 4 from Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Buena Vida Nursing Home in McCamey, and 1 from Encompass Health Rehab of Midland, Odessa. Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital President Stacy Brown said that out of 2,607 tests, 398 people have tested positive and one test is pending. We are going to be using rapid testing from this point out because we have the supplies to be able to do that, so we soon will not have any pending going forward, she said. 8 positive COVID-19 patients are in the hospital, she said. 5 are on ICU and 2 are on ventilators. Of those patients, 2 are from Andrews, 1 is from Pecos, and 1 is from Big Spring, she said, adding that the others are Ector County residents. The Ector County Health Department website detailed that while 4,181 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in the county, 2,790 are confirmed positive, 1,391 are probable positives, 735 cases are listed as active, and 285 tests are reportedly pending. While 3,378 people have reportedly recovered from the virus, 68 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications. Neither city nor county officials were present during the hospital briefing. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan spoke on updated CDC recommendations on how long to wait before discontinuing home isolation for people with COVID-19, which can be located at tinyurl.com/RKR8M3J. He also spoke on the recent National Institutes of Health updates, including the panel decision recommending against chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine with or without azithromycin as a treatment for COVID-19, which can be located at tinyurl.com/Y62UM8RH. Local news roundup. Police continue prostitution sting, charge 16 people. The Odessa Police Department prostitution sting operation that began August 20th continued throughout that weekend, which resulted in 16 men and women arrested. Alfredo Izaguirre, Jr., 35, Ramon Vasquez, 36, Zachary Zavala, 24, Dilip Agrawal, 40, Jose Fidel Perez, 33, and Bernard Ray Strunk, 52, were charged with prostitution, a Class A misdemeanor. Carlos Labastida, 17, Raul Villegas Velos, 30, Kelsey Mays, 21, Mariah Cantu, 22, Courtney Eaglehart, 18, Adriana Pena, 24, Talia Shania Mahoney, 21, Callie Rose Perez, 20, Destiny Dier Mendy, 21, Lorena Medrano, 40, were each charged with prostitution, a Class B misdemeanor. Villegas Velos was additionally charged with possession of a controlled substance, a third-degree felony. Strunk was also charged with possession of a controlled substance, a state jail felony. All 16 men and women were arrested and charged between August 20th and 22nd at the MCM Grande Fun Dome as undercover detectives contacted ads under the dating section of skipthegames.com. Multiple Odessa Police Department affidavits detailed. The six men who were charged with the Class A misdemeanor of prostitution reportedly offered or agreed to pay a fee to an undercover officer to engage in sexual conduct, with prices ranging from $20 to $160. The eight women and two men agreed to sex with fees ranging from $150 to $500. Izaguirre has one bond totaling $1,500 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon, jail records show. Strunk had two bonds totaling $5,000 and posted bail August 22nd. Zavala had one totaling $1,500 and posted bail August 22nd. Perez had one bond totaling $1,500 and posted bail August 25th. Vasquez and Agrawal each had one bond totaling $1,000 and posted bail August 22nd. Labastida had one bond totaling $500 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon, jail records show. Villegas Velos had two bonds totaling $15,500 and posted bail August 22nd. Pena, Mahone, Perez, and Mendy had one bond totaling $500 each and posted bail August 22nd. Cantu, Eaglehart, and Medrano had one bond totaling $500 each and posted bail August 23rd. Mays had one bond totaling $500 and posted bail August 24th. man charged with stabbing spouse in face. An Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed that a 26-year-old man stabbed his spouse in the face after striking her face against the concrete. Ernie Enriquez Jr. was charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a first-degree felony, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 12:40 a.m. Thursday in the 11,000 block of University. The victim, identified as 53-year-old Francis Lopez, reportedly detailed that prior to the arrival of ECSO deputies, her daughter, 30-year-old Stacy Rodriguez, and her spouse, Enriquez, were in an argument. During the physical altercation, Lopez stated she saw Enriquez holding Rodriguez by the hair and striking her face against the concrete walkway, the affidavit stated. That caused cuts, scrapes, and bruising to Rodriguez's face and rendered her unconscious. Lopez reportedly continued to detail that she attempted to stop Enriquez when he went into the residence and grabbed a knife. Enriquez reportedly stabbed Rodriguez in the face with a kitchen knife, and the knife broke in her face. Lopez stated she laid on top of her daughter to prevent further attacks, the affidavit stated. Lopez stated that Enriquez told her, "Move, B blank, or I'll stab you too." Enriquez reportedly returned to the kitchen to get another knife and attempted to stab Rodriguez again, but Lopez was able to grab the knife prior to contacting her daughter. Lopez was cut on her left hand between the thumb and index finger. Enriquez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has 2 bonds totaling $400,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon. Jail records show. ECISD phase-in plan on schedule by Ruth Campbell. With its second first day of school under its belt, Ector County ISD is on track for phase 3 and 4 of its reopening plans. We started school for everybody August 12th. Our Phase 1 kids joined us that day. About 4,200 kids arrived face-to-face that first day. The rest of our students experienced school in a virtual format, Superintendent Scott Murray said in a media call Wednesday. Today, August 26th, we welcomed our Phase 2 students, and then next week we'll welcome Phase 3, and then the following week, Phase 4, he added. Phase 1 was all students without internet access at home, children of ECISD staff members, and 3-year-olds. About 4,200 students came to school the first day, which rose to almost 5,000 students as of August 25th. Phase 2, which started August 26th, included the return of pre-kindergarten through second grade students at elementary school and sixth grade at middle school on an A-day, B-day schedule and added about 3,000 students. Others are learning remotely at home, the district website said. Travis and Knoll Elementary brought back third grade during this phase. Pease and Zavala Elementaries are phasing in pre-kindergarten through first grade, the site said. Our elementary schools really saw a significant influx of students, Murray said. Next week, September 1st, we are on schedule to welcome our Phase 3 students. Phase 3 will consist of bringing 3rd and 7th graders back on an A-day, B-day schedule. Knoll and Travis Elementary Schools will bring back 4th grade, and Pease and Zavala will bring back 2nd grade during this phase. Murray said Phase 4 can begin September 8th due to improved health conditions in the community. The phase-in schedule is only for students who chose to return to school in person or chose the hybrid model of one day at school and one day at home. Phase 4 really welcomes in the rest of our students, and so every student who has selected either hybrid or face-to-face, you are welcome to join us Tuesday, September 8th. That's all of our 8th graders, all of our 11th and 12th graders, juniors and seniors. We are anxious to welcome you and let our seniors begin their senior year finally in a face-to-face environment, Mary said. He said at the elementary and middle school level, parents can choose face-to-face, hybrid, or virtual education for their children. At the high school level, all families have two choices: hybrid, which is that alternating A day, B day, so one day of face-to-face, one day of virtual, or the second choice at the high school level is a completely virtual environment, Murray said. Parents, you have an opportunity to change your mind, and so in engaging in conversation with your children starting this Friday for a one-week period of time, each of the ECISD school websites will contain a form. Parents can visit the website of their child's school if they wish to change their mind about their child's learning environment. If they don't wish to change it, they don't have to do anything. Murray said. The change will be made in December. The form is only for those families who wish to change their mind if you want to make a different decision for your child. Those forms will be live Friday, August 28th. Asked if sexual harassment training would be made more frequent in the wake of the arrest of an Odessa Collegiate Academy teacher, William Boone, Murray said the training is offered more often. This particular school year, every single staff member, so the 4,200 staff members in ECISD, had that training in a virtual environment. In addition to that, at the school level, those people who are in contact with students receive that training through our leadership. Assistant principals and head principals provided that training for each of our staff members this year, and we continue to do that, Mary said. These are conversations that we have on a regular basis. Regardless of training, our leaders provide the regular reminders to staff members to ensure that the relationship that any employee in ECISD has with a student is a healthy relationship, he added. It is critical that our kids today, pre-K through 12th grade, maintain positive, healthy relationships with teachers, administrators, and with others on their campuses. That's critical to the academic pursuits of our kids, but the example that we've seen in the last 2 days, that is a horrific example of the type of relationship that should never exist between any staff member and any student. We condemn that as a school district, and we'll certainly pursue this situation to the fullest extent that we can. ECISD reaching out for old friends and new. On Saturday, Ector County ISD team members will set out across Odessa to locate students who have not yet returned to school and recruit some who have yet to start. Carver Early Education Center is taking its pre-kindergarten registration to the Pleasant Farms Community Center, 4455 West Apple, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This outreach will give families who are considering pre-K a chance to talk with Carver EEC leaders and register in person, a news release said. All children who are 4 years old on or before September 1st may register for pre-kindergarten. Families will need to bring the child's birth certificate, immunization record, child's social security card, proof of income, last paycheck stub or other documentation, proof of residence, utility bill or lease or mortgage, and parents' driver's license or other government-issued ID. ECISD expanded pre-K this year. Also, on Saturday, the ECISD Community Outreach Center will host a new event, a welcome walk through neighborhoods, to reach out to those students who have not yet registered for the new year. Volunteers will arrive at the Community Outreach Center, 301 East Clements, by 8 a.m., and will be traveling out in pairs.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.